Hello and welcome back to the MJA podcast. My name's Kate Swanell and I am the Journal's news and online editor. Climate change is one of those topics like religion and politics that always seems to divide a room. For those of us who like a bit of evidence with our belief system, the argument that human activity has contributed to climate change and that we can potentially and positively affect it has a mountain of data to back it up. This week, the MJA and The Lancet collaborated to publish a wide-ranging assessment of where Australia's climate change vulnerabilities lie and what we are and should be doing about it. Associate Professor Paul Beggs is an environmental health scientist with Macquarie University. He's also a co-author of the MJA Lancet Countdown, and he's my guest on the pod today. Talk to me a little bit about the Lancet Countdown and Australia's involvement in it.
It all started really back in September 2017, and that was just ahead of the release of the Lancet Countdown report, the global report. And a group of scientists, experts in the climate change and human health area came together at the University of Sydney. And that was, I suppose, taking advantage of a conference that was taking place there at the time. And we discussed the possibility of doing an Australian assessment, basically paralleling the Lancet Countdown process. And we had a preliminary copy of the paper that was about to come out, the global report, and started to think about its breadth and depth, and one, whether we had the time to get an Australian report together within a year was our aim to do, and whether, you know, we really had the depth and breadth of expertise across Australia to cover all of the areas that the Lancet Countdown covers. So it started in September 2017. And things really just took off from there. Myself and Dr. Ying Zhang at the University of Sydney in the School of Public Health have co-led the Australian Countdown, the MJA Lancet Countdown here in Australia. And we've pulled together experts far and wide within Australia, many of those at the University of Sydney and Macquarie University, also a whole range of other institutions within Australia, 13 in total.
Tell me a little bit about the structure of the Countdown, Australian Countdown. I know you've got, is it 41 indicators across five domains? Is that correct?
That's right. So we've partnered with The Lancet, obviously, University College London and the Medical Journal of Australia, and adopted the overall structure of the Lancet Countdown 2017 report. And as you say, that's got five main sections, and I'll just go through those. The first one is focusing on climate change impacts, impacts on human health, of course, but also exposures and vulnerability. The second major section is on climate change adaptation, planning and resilience for health. The third focuses on another major response to climate change, and that is mitigation.
Yes.
So it's titled Mitigation Actions and Health Co-Benefits, and that's all about trying to reduce the extent of climate change and also some of the additional benefits that we get through doing that. The fourth major section is on economics and finance, and then the final section, the fifth section, is on public and political engagement. It's a very broad-ranging assessment,
yes.
As I said, paralleling that Lancet Countdown structure.
In your perspective that summarises it, you say that Australia is vulnerable, but Australians' health is vulnerable to climate change. What exactly are our vulnerabilities?
Our vulnerabilities to both current climate and climate change are fairly broad. I suppose the most obvious ones are things like vulnerability to heat waves, and all Australians will be very aware of heat waves occurring from time to time. We've had some very big ones in the recent past, and we know through research that those heat waves result in not only a lot of people becoming ill, but also people actually dying.
Yes.
So heat waves have a direct impact on health and well-being, and as I said, can actually kill people who are particularly vulnerable, and that includes the elderly. Extreme events is another good example, another obvious example of Australia's vulnerability. I suppose bushfires are in the news at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
We're coming into the peak bushfire season, late spring, summer, and so on. And again, they can have a direct impact on people's health, and unfortunately, sometimes people can die through those extreme events. Tropical cyclones, another good example. But in Australia, like elsewhere, there's a whole range of other impacts of climate and climate change on our health and well-being that are indirect. So there may be things that people are less aware of. And they include things like vector-borne diseases. Ross River virus is one of the most common ones in Australia,
yep.
but dengue is the one that we focus on in the paper. So that's through the link between climate and other factors within the environment. That might be a mosquito in the case of vector-borne disease, and then, you know, the impact on human health. So vector-borne diseases is an indirect example of impacts of climate change on human health. And the area in which I work is, I suppose, asthma and hay fever, allergic diseases,
yes.
where climate and climate change can have an impact on things like pollen within the atmosphere. It's that increase in pollen, for example, that has an impact on allergic diseases such as asthma and hay fever. So
yep.
here in Sydney in late November, yep, we've got a couple of days with a lot of dust in the atmosphere, and fortunately the health authorities are putting out warnings, which is great to see. People who are already, you know, sort of suffering from respiratory diseases, you know, like people with asthma, to stay indoors and things like that. And again, that's very much related to climate. Probably the drought that we've experienced in Western New South Wales, and
mm-hmm.
then that combined with high wind speeds, picking up that dust and bringing it into the urban centre.
One of the things that interested me was that you've come up with an indicator for mental health. How did you do that, and how do you find the baseline?
It's a really good thing to be focusing on, because mm-hmm. the climate change and mental health indicator is an Australian first, really. It's been known for some time that climate change will have a very large impact on mental health, but it's been very difficult to try and identify an appropriate indicator. So we're actually ahead of the global report in this particular instance. And this is really the work of Professor Helen Berry, the University of Sydney, who is Australia's and quite possibly the world's expert on climate change and mental health. And what we've done is developed a baseline indicator, and we will certainly develop this as we move into the future, and we intend to do annual updates of the MJA Lancet Countdown. But the indicator at the moment, the baseline that we've used, is the relationship between temperature and suicide rate in each of the Australian states and territory.
You're listening to the MJA podcast. I'm chatting today with Associate Professor Paul Beggs from Macquarie University about Australia's climate change health vulnerabilities and policies. The MJA Lancet Countdown collaboration can be found online at www.mja.com.au, where it will be open access for the next year. Because it's not just hot temperature either, is it?
That's right. So we looked at maximum temperature. That was the, I suppose, exposure that we looked at, mean annual maximum temperature. And we looked at a 10-year period for each of the Australian states and territories, compared that mean annual maximum temperature, and we divided males and females.
Yes.
So we looked at the relationship between maximum temperature and suicide rate by gender, males and females, and by state and territory. And we divided the states and territories into the warmer states and territories, which is most of them, and the cooler states and territories, which is Tasmania and the ACT. And the relationship between maximum temperature and suicide in those two categories of state and territory was different. So in the warmer states and territories, there was a positive relationship between suicide rate and maximum temperature. So as the state or territory becomes warmer, or is warmer, there's a higher suicide rate. But in the cooler states and territories, Tasmania and the ACT, there's a negative correlation. The suicide rate is actually higher at the lower maximum temperatures. I suppose it illustrates the complexity of some of the issues that we're dealing with, some of these relationships between climate and human health and climate change and human health. We need to look at them in a fair bit of detail, understand them. And as I said, this is our initial attempt at developing an indicator for climate change and mental health. And it's something that we can extend into the future. We can see whether this relationship changes or remains the same. And we can also look at making it a bit more complex than what it is at the moment. As I said, we're simply looking at suicide rate, which is an indicator of an extreme in terms of mental health. And we can possibly look at developing an indicator that looks at more subtle impacts of climate change on mental health.
Not so long ago, Australia was close to or on the forefront of climate change action. Now we're not so much, to say the least. What's the Countdown's assessment of Australian climate change policy and action? What are we up to and what should we be up to?
I suppose the overall assessment is that Australia is not in a good place at the moment in terms of national policy on climate change. And we have a very long way to go in terms of developing appropriate policy in response to climate change, and in particular climate change and human health. And I suppose that applies to both mitigation of climate change and adaptation to climate change.
Yes.
There are some examples of good policy and good action within Australia. I suppose planning for heat waves, their impacts on human health is an example of where Australia has done reasonably well, but there's mostly examples of where we've gone backwards in many respects and we lag behind many other comparable countries, which is very unfortunate for a country that, as you say, used to lead the world in various aspects of climate change policy.
Yeah. Our carbon emissions policy is, how would you rate it?
I think it's extremely poor. So I think when you compare Australia to countries like the US, the UK, Germany, the OECD, you know, average, we come towards the bottom, if not the bottom. And I think other countries within the OECD, other comparable countries, have overtaken us. So if we look at things like renewable energy, electricity generation, Australia used to be ahead of countries like Germany and the United Kingdom, and now those countries are ahead of us. We've really missed a wonderful opportunity and a great opportunity to really move forward in these areas and to lead the world. And we have the, I think, ability in Australia to be a leader in many of these areas, and we just lack that political will and that political action.
You said it's political will and political action. Is it a matter of swapping parties? Is there a bigger malaise going on in terms of believing the science? There seems to be a movement globally to be dismissive of science and elitism and intellectual pursuits. Do you feel like this is just a matter of voting out one party and voting in another?
I don't think it's that simple. I think both parties have a role to play here, regardless of which major party might be running the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all parties need to work together on this because we need responses and policies and solutions that are going to be there for years and decades and centuries to come. In fact, talking about a problem that needs well thought out solutions and policies, and we need to have those put in place and remain in place. And I think that's been one of the problems in the past, that whatever party might put in good policies, then you know, they're removed not long after for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So I think we need policies that have very broad support. But I think, it's something that all parties in Australia need to think very carefully about and take very seriously, because here we're obviously talking about the health of Australians, and we're talking about their health, but also people dying. And I suppose that's one of the major messages coming through this article, is that if we fail to act and if we fail to respond, then, people are going to become sick and people are going to die. So we're making a decision either way. If we fail to respond and fail to act, then we know what the consequences are.
Is the countdown about making governments more accountable, showing them the evidence, showing them the consequences?
I think it is. I think if governments and the public are shown the reality of the situation, and they can see, as I said before, there are some examples of where things are really going well, they can also see where we're falling behind and where a lot of action is required, then I think it does put pressure on both governments and the public to take the issue seriously enough and to probably get that action happening. So I think we're going to be doing this, as I said, annually from now on. And I think Australia has a great opportunity here. And I think that's one of the positive messages coming out of the article, that regardless of what's happened in the past, tomorrow is a new day. And I think regardless of what party is in power, they can really make an amazing change. They simply need to understand the importance of this and the seriousness of this, the impacts of climate change on human health, and to respond appropriately. And I think if the information, as you say, is out there, then I think governments are empowered to make those decisions. And I think one of the things that we look at is media exposure of climate change and human health.
Yes.
And that media exposure has decreased over the past decade or so. And hopefully another thing that will happen through the release of this article is that there will be more media attention to this article and to this area. And that, again, yep, will inform people and they will hopefully vote accordingly. As we come up to elections at whatever level, then hopefully climate change and climate change and human health will be on the agenda. And it's those parties that are making the right decisions that people will vote for.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay, I'll speak to you later.
Thanks. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.